There was times I felt like I was going to drive my car through the hospital building to get home. Because I was just pent up rage, frustration, my head was about to explode. And imagine, like, you're in a situation where the person you love more than anything is in pain and you can't comfort her. You can't just put your arm around her. You can't hold her hand.
Right then, welcome to the Still Parents podcast. My name is Dan, I'm here as always with Ryan and with Matt. How are you, Matt? You okay there, buddy?
I'm good. I can see you now, Dan. It was in the way. I need to see your face.
Ryan, you well?
I'm very well, thank you.
We'd like to thank very much to our guest this evening, who's making his time, just had his tea, I think. Welcome along onto the podcast, Mr. James Green. How are you, James?
I'm good. Apart from a cold, I'm good. So if I sound like I'm like talking like I'm
sounds
from
like Sean Dyche. 1,000
feet.
Yeah, he does sound like Sean Dyche. Yeah.
Or Sean Dyche, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that has changed, and, you know, and also countering the counter now. You know, teams are now working on a counter-attack basis. Well, if you break that up, how quickly can you counter the counter and then counter their counter to counter the counter?
Did you get that much?
What, Sean Dyche? No.
You don't look anything like him, by the way.
I can say you're talking voice. You're talking looks.
No.
I can make the voice, but the look. Come on, man.
Yeah. Sean Dyche wish he looked like James Green. But that's, yeah.
You wouldn't say that to his face, though, would you?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. James Green, you—if you're watching on the stream, you may recognise. If you're listening back in your podcast provider, have a look at the graphic for this. You may recognise as well, especially if you're a sports fan. James Green is on Sky News and Sky Sports and Sky Sports News. Is that right? Missing off there.
No, that's about right. I've been around the block. I've been on ITV a little bit, been on Channel 4 in the mix, and I try and get my face everywhere. I just want everyone to recognise me, really.
So they know it's not Sean Dyche.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I actually saw you. We were just saying before we came on air, I saw you. So if you're listening overseas, in the football season, we have the transfer deadline, which I guess, we'll talk about NFL in a second. I guess it's like the draft, isn't it, in a way? It's when you get your players in. And it was the last day. What they do on Sky Sports News, they always get loads of people outside the grounds as all the exciting transfers are coming in. However, on this particular transfer window, it's like the quietest one you've had in years. And James was stood outside a training ground for about 8 hours with a bag of Haribo waiting to introduce an 18-year-old or something like that.
First of all, I wish it was 8 hours. It was, more like 18 hours,
oh,
I think.
Wow.
For the second deadline day in a row, I was down in Brighton. And last year, in the summer, I was there from 6:30 in the morning, left at 11:30 at night. There was one sign-in and it happened midway through the day when we were already speaking to the manager. So that was a waste of time.
Brilliant.
And then this one, I mean, just the whole window was just rubbish. Football's changing, as they say. But yes, I did get excited over an 18 and 19-year-old that nobody had ever heard of signing for Brighton. Glamour.
I remember they don't do it anymore, and I think they've had to change it. But
still, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, right. You know what I'm probably going to say. The transfer deadline day when they allowed the fans there. And like,
or behind the room.
Right, yeah. And like, it's just carnage. Like, by the end of the day, the presenters, you just couldn't hear them because there was just people like...
Well, they're quite well behaved at the start, but by 5 to 11, they're smashed, aren't they? They've been down the offie.
There was one bloke waving it. Am I allowed to say this?
Yeah.
He waving a dildo, wasn't there, at one point, like on one of them. He was even in the background, and they caught him, but they didn't see him to start with, and he kept hiding when they're trying to move him. And eventually they were like, mate, you got to go. You've got to get out of here.
So wait, you, Ryan?
No.
Ryan actually was on 606 last night. He phoned up Sutton and Savage, and he just told us about I heard it and didn't realise it was him.
I put my posh voice on, that's why.
What were you moaning
about?
What
made you so angry?
Yeah. No.
He's angry in general, James. You'll find out. So I think we're about done with our sport chat.
Yeah, let's see.
It's over.
James, thank you so much for joining us on the Still Parents podcast tonight. Thank you very much for taking the time to come on, because I know it's difficult to obviously with everything that you're going through, but then to relive it and then to share those thoughts and to do it for the benefit of other people as well who can relate to you and to get the benefit of your experience of what you and it's your fiance, isn't it, Nicola? Going through.
We had to clear that bit up at the start. Yeah, fiance, not wife, not yet.
How long have you been engaged for?
Steady. 2.5 years. That sounds so bad.
Sorry, it does, to be fair. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said ten and a half.
No, two and a half. Two and a half, not ten.
I was going to say
still bad.
That's pretty impressive. So you've had, I think it's since within the last 3 years, isn't it, James? You've had three miscarriages. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, three pretty much to start the last 3 years off. It's the timing doesn't help. You know what I mean? Mm. Like with all this, I mean, it's such a horrific subject that you guys know full well all about. And, but the timing of it, happening at the start of each year, it's like, because you kind of look forward to, you know, get to a new year and you're like, right, new year, everything's going to be different. And then we bang, like a week into it, it's like, okay, this sets the tone of the year to come. So, challenging. Challenging few years, that's for sure.
If you don't mind, and we say this to every guest, and take as long as you need or as little time as you want, Ryan and Matt will come in with any thoughts or questions that they may have for you. Just take us back to your first one, January 2021, and just talk us through how things came about and your reaction. And we'll chip in with some thoughts and some questions through that. Just the journey that you and Nicola embarked on 3 years ago at the start.
Absolutely. I mean, look, like many dads, many men, you want to be a dad. And for me, it was, I always wanted to be a dad. Like even when I was like in my teenager, I always just focus on, I'd be a dad. I'd take my kid to football, or I would, teach my daughter to stay away from boys forever. You know, every classic dad thing. And I just, that's what I wanted in my life. And my journey, because of, I guess, work, etc., it kind of takes you on a different pathway, so it wasn't necessarily an option for me, certainly in my late 20s. Me and my partner, we bought a house in lockdown and we moved out, and we started having a discussion about maybe at some point we'll start to have a family, maybe we'll look a year later. And then bang, first month.
Oh, wow.
There we go. And I mean...
You were happy, weren't you? Look how fertile I am.
You can imagine. Yeah. Like, picture Conor McGregor walking around. I mean, genuinely.
Swinging arms. Yeah. Notorious. Chest out.
It was just like the most manly moment of my entire life, I think. It really was. I felt so on top of the world. And, it was just... We just couldn't believe it. But we were so ecstatic. And that feeling... We'll never forget it, and it's always lodged in my brain. The sad reality is we'll never feel that again, because regardless of what pregnancy we have been forward, we know what the experience has been like. So, but we were skipping through life. We went and had an early scan at about 8 or 9 weeks, and everything was fine. We saw a heartbeat. We were good. We, at that point, I've got to admit, we were really naive to thoughts of taking risks, thoughts of like that it might not happen, like thoughts of we can tell people it's fine because we're at a good stage. I never crossed our minds that anything could go wrong. And I think I've probably been a bit, maybe again, sometimes until you go through things, you don't quite allow yourself to open up to things that might go wrong. A miscarriage, baby loss, it hadn't really registered with me at all.
It's stripped away as soon as you go through any kind of loss, because ultimately you're then just expecting it to happen the second time round, right? You know, and as much as you try and separate the pregnancies, the clients I work with now who become pregnant again, I say it's very important to try and separate pregnancies. But
how do you manage the expectations then during that, or any advice in that sort of regard?
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
Because I can say that all day long to a client, but I knew how I felt when we went on to have Etta.
Yeah.
You know, and the second pregnancy that we had. And Aaron Snipe came on, didn't he, a couple of weeks back and talked about how hard it was in the second pregnancy for him.
He really didn't enjoy that.
I'm interested, James, like that word naivety, do you feel like it has disappeared pretty much now?
Yeah, completely. Which isn't necessarily a good thing either.
No.
You know, you. It's one of them that I think when I speak to people about and share my story, and with certainly people who haven't even started that their pregnancy journey off, you know, you want people to be naive. You don't want them to focus on what might go wrong. You want people to be encouraged by the success stories and focus on that, and focus on enjoying yourself enjoying that moment. And, you know, I certainly would change it for the world. The only problem was that when things didn't go to plan and we suffered the news, and that was the 12-week scan, the drop-off's more severe. And the drop-off really, was tough for me. Like I just remember going into, I always remember it, like, I don't think you'll ever be forgotten now, but going into hospital for that scan, on the way, we were just so excited. Yeah. We were talking about, oh God, how are we going to do the picture with the sonogram? How are we going to pose? But going in, and I never had a doubt until I walked into the hospital. It was still one version of lockdown. I walked in with my partner, went to the reception and got screamed at to get out.
Oh gosh.
Because I wasn't supposed to be there.
Wow.
And at that point, that was horrific. And I had to leave her there and go outside, pacing up and down. And I'll never forget, I just got a message for her, and it was, "You can come up now." No smiley, no kiss.
Oh wow.
Nothing. And I was like, right. And that was it. And all of a sudden, the lady in reception who screamed and shouted at me was a completely different lady, really. She was, you know, "Come this way, come this way. It's okay, come here." And so, and that was that. And then you found out the worst news that you could ever deal with. And even following up from that, we had to go to an early pregnancy unit. Again, I had to let my partner go in, who's just been devastated to hear this news, and I had to wait outside.
It was mad that during lockdown, wasn't it? The fact that even at that, and I understand that there's, you know, the rules. I mean, not the politicians, but many of them followed themselves, was it? But in that situation, then surely there can be the allowances. Look, you're in the, I know we're going back to lockdown days, but you got that bubble, but you're part of it's your fucking family.
Yeah, yeah. It was pathetic. And no one, excuse me, nobody should ever have had to have gone through any form of loss in the way that people were having to go through loss. Yeah. We had guests on right at the very beginning when we first started the podcast. Mm. And I can't, his name just has gone from me. I can't remember his name, who we had on, who was in the car park. And I think he got the dog in the car with him. Yeah. And his wife or partner had to go into hospital by herself, and was told that their baby had died, and they were in 30 plus weeks. It doesn't make any difference whether it's 30 weeks, 20 weeks, 12 weeks, 6 weeks. It's inhumane what people had to go through.
Yeah.
And putting politics aside, is that actually nobody should ever have had to have gone through that by themselves. And actually, I say by themselves, or with somebody that they didn't know, i.e. when your partner is in that room having a scan with somebody that she doesn't know, whilst you get the empathy from the medical professional, you need the people that are closest to you at that time.
Yeah.
And it was disgusting that people had to experience that.
I think it's very well said. Yeah, I mean,
Side that, I'm also interested to hear, James, as well, because again, we've touched upon this subject a little bit in the past about, especially the first pregnancy, did you hear that kind of thing that you get to 12 weeks and everything's fine?
Yeah, that was in our heads for sure, because that is
exactly right.
Just the consensus that the everyday person kind of sticks with, right?
Yeah.
And it was, we'll get 12 weeks. But if I'm being honest, when we had the early scan, we thought we're fine.
Yeah.
I'll be truthful, we really did. And it wasn't until that scan at that point, and everything changed. But yeah, you there was this, you know, and then talking about it, you learn about, what does this 12-week period mean? What does that even mean? Does it stand for anything? Does it not? Is it safe? Is it not? Do you post about it, tell people, or do you not? And you just, there's so much stuff that goes into your head. And I think every situation is so different. But the reality is that there still isn't enough information out there. There isn't enough knowledge out there. There isn't enough things being taught to the younger generations carry on throughout their lives further of what can happen.
Yeah.
And it's not just 12 weeks. It's not just this. It's not just that. It can happen throughout the journey.
Yeah.
And it's to me, it's just a lack of education.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And actually, the 12-week thing, I mean, I've said it before, we've said it before, it's a myth. The reason the 12-week thing, yes, okay, you have, there's a lot that happens within that first 12 weeks genetically and the start of the sort of congenital process, if you like. But the actual 12-week is a myth because it was the first time you ever had a scan. You would never have had early scans going back to when we were kids. It just wouldn't have happened. You know, I always remember my mom saying she didn't know she was pregnant with me until she'd missed two or three periods.
And the amount of guests that we've had on as well, and James just said it themselves, is because I think a lot of people, if you get to that 12-week, and then it's almost like a false sense of security then, isn't it?
It adds to the naivety.
Like there's a finality to it of, okay,
plain sailing.
Adds to it.
And it doesn't work like that. No. It doesn't work like that.
You mentioned about the education, and it's one of the again, it's something that we hear a lot, and it's one of the reasons why we started this podcast, which we actually started during lockdown, wasn't it? When we started it, how did you handle? I'm sorry if it's I don't mean to be insensitive when I ask this, but before you tried again, went with the second pregnancy, how did you handle to educate yourself mentally? Where were you at? What did you want to know? Was there anything that you were trying to ignore about it, or how did you take it all in?
Mentally, it destroyed me, in all seriousness. For the first 2 weeks after finding out the loss, I could barely speak to anybody. I was in a really dark place. And fortunately, my partner was just incredibly strong. And then when I got my strength back, she then dipped and I was able to pick her up. So I was, you know, really fortunate about it. But I couldn't heal. I didn't know how to heal. Mm. Didn't know where to turn. Didn't know who to speak to. Didn't know who I could trust to speak to. It's difficult when you go through something you do. That the first thing is you're on your own in this.
Yeah.
You think it's just you. We know. And you guys know by doing this podcast, there so many people are affected by it. And there are so many people that do go through it. But you look at your immediate family or friends, and I'm looking there going, no one understands. No one understands what I'm going through. There were some friends of mine that unfortunately said the wrong things, didn't quite know how to handle it. And that was tough, and that became very challenging. And then it was, I guess, you know, we had complications with it being a miscarriage. So it wasn't straightforward at all. Multiple operations followed. I think two operations followed the first one. It was complex, and an infection happened. Then we were in A&E, and again, lockdown was going on. So again, I'm stood outside or sat in my car while rushing my partner to A&E, not being able to be there next to her.
And it adds to it psychologically. I can imagine it adds psychologically then too.
Yeah. Hugely. Like, I mean, I speak to a counsellor now. Like, we both do together to try and navigate through it. And, you know, she always sometimes takes me back to that moment while I was feeling when I'm sat in the car waiting, having my partner crying on the phone to me, being stuck there.
Yeah,
I told her there was times I felt like I was going to drive my car through the hospital building to get her, because I was just pent up rage, frustration. Mm. My head was about to explode. And imagine, like, you're in a situation where the person you love more than anything is in pain, and you can't comfort her. Yeah. You can't just put your arm around her. You can't hold her hand. I mean, it was just... It was such a horrific time, and I think you hit the nail on the head earlier, Ryan, really. I mean, it was just inhumane. It was anyone going through any sort of grief. It was ridiculous. But look, you then educate yourself, right? We go through this, we educate ourselves, and that's what we did. We both did. We tried to understand what was happening. We tried to understand maybe why. Now, you go through a first miscarriage or this miscarriage, you still... okay, these things can happen. You learn about statistics. One in four pregnancies end in a miscarriage. You scratch your head and go, fuck, okay. Mm. Didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's 25%. Okay, fine. We might have been unlucky. And then you mentally prepare yourself to go again. And then it's a completely different experience. You know, you find out you're pregnant. My partner was happy. I was numb. Mm. I was numb, and I was useless. For the next two, I was utterly horrendous, and I can't change that.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get out of myself and my head into protecting myself. So I had my protective helmet on, going, right, if I get too excited, I'm going to feel shit as I did after the first one. I'm going to then put myself in a really uncomfortable place personally that I never, ever want anybody to go in. I don't want to be there again. So my helmet went on and that was it. I was just numb, which you was shit for my partner.
You have basically gone from a glass half full to a glass half empty.
Yeah,
that is basically exactly what has happened. And you, like you say, you've put the barriers up because immediately you're thinking, shit, I can't get hurt like this again.
Is it self-preservation?
I think it is self-preservation. 100%. It is, of course it is. I think there's a question I'd quite like to ask, and where you said about the for a good couple of weeks after the first miscarriage, you were an absolute wreck and you couldn't talk or anything like that to anybody. Had you, up until that point, ever had any sort of significant losses that you had experienced in your life? Or was this really the very first experience of losing someone who is obviously very, very close to you?
I lost my granddad in 2019 in April. So that would have been about maybe a year and a half before. And he was someone I was very close with. And that was tough. That there's no doubt about it. It was tough. But was it at the level of this loss? No. You know, my granddad lived till he was 94. It was very, very new. Now, I had in the past, I'd had a partner many years ago, this is very open, but I'm going to go with it. I had a one night stand with somebody that I knew, and she ended up getting pregnant and she decided to have an abortion. Now, I, throughout my life, have never really... That's not how I envisaged anything. I always thought that if I got myself in a situation and made a mistake or whatever, I would make the best of it because in my head, it was always like, well, you never know what's around the corner. Mm. And lo and behold, this is what we're living through now. So it hurt back then a lot. That was probably the toughest time in my life getting through that and understanding what was going on at that point.
I bet that brings it back as well, doesn't it?
That's a different level, right?
I'm going to be honest, James, I weren't expecting that answer.
I'm completely honest.
I wasn't expecting to share that, to be honest. You never know.
But at the same time, I mean, thank you for sharing that because obviously that's not something that's very easy to share. I can only imagine that that's not very easy to share, which I suppose... brings me on to another question. Did you ever question whether, because of what had happened in the past, I think you probably know where I'm going to go with this, is that did you feel that maybe the reason you were going through now, what you were going through, is because what had happened in the past? The only reason I ask that is because I have seen clients in the past who say that they feel that karma hold of them. I'm not a karma believer, me personally, but I know some people are, and that's why I've sort of asked that question, is because I know there's some people that do think like that and some that don't.
I felt that.
What your belief system is, isn't it?
I felt that with Callie, because we'll get James' answer as well, because I felt like when I was younger, I'd been a complete dickhead to some people.
You've said this before, so you thought that was life's karma as a way to come back and say, you shouldn't have done this when you were 19.
Absolutely, because I'd done this, I'd done that, I'd done the other.
Do you still believe it now? Do you still believe it now?
Part of me always, probably, because it comes with the guilt.
Yeah.
Guilt then you add in, and that's another complete other topic. But very interested to hear your answer on this, James.
I don't know if I felt like it was karma, because it was a decision out that was taken away from me. So it certainly wasn't my decision at all. Yeah. And I had to accept that at the time, and that took a long time to accept. It took probably three or four months before I finally got past that, and I was in a really, really bad state, really. But I also wasn't looking after myself and did the usual, you're in a bad mental health state and then you turn to drink. Brilliant. Yeah. Genius idea. That made me feel 10 times worse. Of course it did. Yeah, it's not karma, but it's definitely something that's been on my mind And it is still. I mean, the fact I brought it up today is obviously still on my mind. Mm. And it is. And I think it's more to do with, have I missed that opportunity?
Right.
Have I missed that opportunity to become a dad? Was that it? Was that the moment? And what's this happening? Well, because you try and analyze everything and you go as deep, and whether people think it's karma or what, you just over analyze every aspect of it and you try and figure out what it is, why is it happening, and ultimately there often isn't a reason why.
We always look for answers when,
of course you do,
actually the answers probably aren't there.
James mentioned earlier about how, especially, you know, the first few months, you were saying you could barely speak to anybody. But it has to come out somewhere. But you've still got your internal monologue, your internal dialogue, whatever it is, all these questions, and you overthink and you overanalyze, and then that's not going to help you. And that so that's probably going to come back into your mind, all of these things from, what did you say, you were 18, 19 years old when that happened or something?
No, it's a bit older than that, but it was, oh God,
but young, you know,
yeah, 15 years ago or something.
So,
yeah.
So that's there. And then, so where's it going to go? You've got to direct it. And then you've got the physical, you know, we'll come to that in a bit, you know, how you let it out. There has to be that release in some degree. Like we've mentioned it before, you know, Ryan shouting at the football, phoning up 606, well, you know, whatever, it, you know, and do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Danny wasn't shouting, all right? He wasn't shouting. They just lost the game, but he wasn't shouting.
I should
shouting.
Play you some... Right.
You're bullying me now.
I'll play you some of Ryan's voice notes if you want to hear what he's like. He shouts, my goodness.
Chris, only when the dog's not behaving
himself. That Christmas episode was amazing, just to hear Ryan's ranty voice notes. So 2021, it was the first miscarriage, and you mentioned about how with the following two, you kind of went into your shell a little bit as a way, you know, for the reasons that we've spoken about. How did that impact on the relationship side? Because obviously, you know, your fiance, not your wife yet, you've still got
to, you know,
you're still there, you're going through it again. You're now wary of what happened the first time. So how did that go down, and what kind of support were you able to offer each other?
Yeah, look, it's tough, and I'm sure you know you guys know that the pressure and stress it puts on a relationship is quite phenomenal. You never expect to be put under that sort of pressure, scrutiny, stress. You're dealing with high emotional people at the same time going through something. I think you're always going to lock heads at times. It's going to happen. But look, the hardest thing I think was that it just changed us, you know, and it changed me. And there's no doubt about it. The person you are sat here talking to is a different person to that guy skipping through life at the end of 2020, excited to become a dad for the first time. I'm not the same person now because of the trauma and everything that we've dealt with. It's definitely made me go into my shell more.
James, are you finding it tough to get to know the new person at times?
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Yeah, and to accept that this is me now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Accept that there's social situation. I was the most social person ever. Any social event, I'm right there. I'm with everybody. I'm laughing, joking. I'm there. I was at my most comfortable in social environments. Since that moment, I've now gone the complete opposite way. Where most social occasions, I'm just so much more quieter. I'm standoff. I can't get, struggle to get involved in conversations.
And then if you're known as one of the people who is, you know, one of the people who in that social environment is, oh, let's go talk to James, he's always good value, or, you know, that person you gravitate to, but maybe it's someone who's not that close in your circle, they didn't know, and then they're almost expecting you to, all right, entertain me, and then you're in that place. How have you found that? Have you come, you know, because as Matt said, great question, because you've got to get to know a new version of yourself, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, to be honest, just being honest with people.
Yeah.
You know, just not sugarcoating it, not trying to put on a brave face all the time and stuff like that. Like, I've kind of been sick of doing that. Mm. You know, been doing it for 3.5 years, I would say, but I'm learning gradually during that time that, you know, to stop doing it. And actually, somebody asked me, are you okay? To go, do you know what? No, I'm absolutely shit. We've just...
But you can't do that because you're British. We're not allowed... When someone asks you if you're okay, you have to go, yeah, I'm fine with you. How's the weather?
Fine, thanks, mate.
Yeah.
But I think the best advice, is just being honest, and honest with those, you know, closer to you, your friends who you trust, who you socialise with. If they understand, then everything's okay. But if you're trying to bottle things up or trying to put on an act, or it just doesn't work. And it makes everybody uncomfortable. And I think sometimes I've just learned to just be really open with how I feel. If I'm in a bad phase, I'll just tell them.
Do you think as well, though, James, because of the nature of your job, where you're on TV reporting and you've got to have that happy-go-lucky, I've got to be smiley, I've got to be upbeat. It's almost like a radio presenter, isn't it? You've got to have that upbeat voice. It's not like you can stand there and talk in some monologue fashion where...
It's like a more amplified version of your natural self.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I suppose, to some extent, at times, you probably felt like you were battling against an actor, against what you were genuinely feeling, and that you were having to put on an act... even though you weren't feeling in that specific way?
100%. I was an actor. Mm. No, 100%. I was an actor. So take our second loss. The afternoon of our second loss, I went to work.
Oh wow, really?
And that's where my mental state was. It was just I had no clue what was going on.
Is that because is that because you wanted to, or you had? I'm assuming they would have let you... Come off.
Yeah, they'd have been amazing. They've been incredibly supportive with everything we've gone through. When I've had been rushed into hospital and stuff like that, I've had to let them down. They've been brilliant. I don't know is the answer. I kind of just felt like I didn't want to let them down. I felt like, well, what can I do? This has happened again. Yeah. With it previously.
How was that day?
I had to go to Red Bull, I think they just won the F1 Constructors Championship or something like that. And as Ryan said, put on an act.
Distraction.
And I was an actor. Mm. And it was a distraction. And it's like, if I focus on this, I'm shutting out the pain of what I'm going through. And as much as there's a balance with this, there's a balance with shutting down with distractions and solely just having your distractions and not coping and dealing with the reality. But some distractions are really good. If you swarm yourself with the negativity of what you're going through all the time, it can be over-consuming. It can really drag you down. So having that as a distraction was a good thing. And I think that's kind of where my mind was at the time to go use this as a distraction. But I should never have gone to work that day. Never, ever in a million years. But I switched on, put on an act, and that was it. So I remember as soon as I finished, got in my car, and I literally just floods of tears. Burst into tears. And then I was angry at myself. What was I doing going there?
Thing is, though, James, it's you do, at that point, you go into, it's like a comfort zone. This is what you know. You know how to do this, right? I can relate.
Yeah.
We had Callie's funeral. I'd buried my daughter. The next day, I started pre-season training with the team that I was managing at the time.
Yeah, I remember saying
that.
And I
was stood in front of a group of lads, and literally 24 hours before, I'd been in a church and then a graveyard, right? And then I'm stood there, first day of pre-season, trying to get a group of lads to get, and it was a new job as well. I'd gone into a new manager's, football manager's job. And I'm like, right, I've got to motivate. I've got to do this. I've got to do that. But actually, I felt that is... this is my safe place, so I can do that.
Yeah. So then again, it was the day after.
It was the
just like what James said. How did you feel at the end then when you got back in your car? Was it just because I can't imagine anything. Exhausted. That has got to be the most mentally drained, because you're at this lowest point anyway.
Exhausted, emotional, everything that James has said.
Wow.
But it's like what James is absolutely right. And there's a theme that runs through. It's what Ryan's just said about distraction.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, we ask every guest, don't we, about the distractions?
They are distractions, but actually they're comfort blankets as well. As like they can be, right? Obviously, there's other things that aren't, of course, but it's what I can do. I know I can do that. So actually, and also because the thing is as well, and I don't know whether James has had this feeling at any time as well. When we lost Callie, my confidence was knocked massively in other parts of my life because I felt like a failure. So like...
It brings back in the male stereotypes, doesn't it?
Right. But then I knew with football coaching, there's two sides to me. So there's my personal side and then my football coaching side. My football coaching side, I don't really care who I upset. I couldn't give a crap. I'm the manager. I'm the coach. I'm the director. I'm the person that has to deal with these players.
Mm.
So actually that's the act. That's the actor that, that comes in. And that, but that's the comfortable side, because I know I can do that and I'm in control of it.
Yeah, makes total sense. Well, the distractions we spoke about, there's the different forms, doesn't it? Was it Kieran Anders, our guest that we had on before you, James? And he was still at university when he had his loss, and he was working in a bar. So his natural reaction was to, I think he just took on crazy hours and spent every moment he wasn't at work in the other side of the bar. So obviously the alcohol... And as you alluded to earlier, and we've had other guests who've come on as well, who've thrown themselves into work and just varying forms of those distractions.
Have you felt a lack of control, James, as well?
No, not overly. No, and I think the reason being is because I haven't turned to things that I know are really bad for me. Right. I didn't turn to drink, so. What I'd done in the past, I'd learned from. So, yes, I definitely, on the first, maybe second, maybe third that night, I definitely had some wine. But that was it. I was then in the gym the next morning.
Yeah.
Doing the things that I know I needed to do to put myself in a better mental state and ultimately have that control.
Yeah. Mm.
Because I'm no use for my partner. Yeah. If I'm hungover, drunk, what use am I when she's going through absolute hell? So I would say the element, I think I have had the element of control. Don't get me wrong. There's been times where it's, you have bad days and you're wobbling and you're a little bit lost, but I've reset and I'm able to get myself back into that grounded place where I know I can support my fiance if she needs it. So she needs me, I'm there. And I think that's so, that became maybe part of my coping mechanism as well, I need to ensure that I'm in a good place to be able to support her.
So after that day, James, when you'd been to work, did you then have some time off?
No.
Carried on.
Oh my gosh.
No, carried on. Look, I'm freelance, so it's not like I'm working every day. So in my head, I always knew, well, I'll have a couple of days off here and there. But I never had an extended period of time off. It would always be the odd days here and there. It's difficult because it's different. My work's different, and again, being freelance, your work comes and goes, but you've also got to take on the work when it comes in, and then you don't want to let people down, so you're like, right, there's a balance to try and have here. I never felt like my work was preventing me from grieving and getting through everything. But having said that, I definitely overworked myself after probably the second one. I think I absolutely overworked myself. I needed the art of distraction and I did it too much. There's no doubt about it. I wasn't able to support my partner as much because all I was doing was being selfish and going, right, I'm just going to work, because as you say, that's your comfort zone. That's where you know what you're doing. This is where there's no talk about babies. I'm just there talking about sport. That's my job and I'm doing it. But I was no use to my partner.
I think
because
it's...
just you then get tired out and you just, you come home, you're crabby. You don't want to talk about depressing stuff. So definitely for a period, I overworked 100%.
Where are you guys at with things now?
It's complicated. And again, this is... You know, for those out there listening who maybe don't understand the miscarriage side of things, when it doesn't just come out and you're having to medically induce and you're having to have operations for removal. My partner's had 7 operations to date surrounding that. Sometimes there's been complications. Mm. Sometimes there's been medical errors. Yeah, so our last loss was January 2023. And again, it was a brutal time, and it led to an emergency operation that my partner had to have. She had a blood hemorrhage. In the complications that followed, we had to call an ambulance out during the ambulance crisis. So it's like fucking hell. It's like lockdown. Then it was like an ambulance crisis, and we sat at home and like. The absolute normal thing would have been call an ambulance, and we're sitting there questioning it, going, "Do you think we should? What if Deirdre down the road collapses though, and the poor old girl can't do it?" Like, this is the strangest going through our head.
And do you know what? You couldn't have got a train because the fucking trains aren't working.
But
how is Deirdre okay? By the way, she's all right.
She's fine. She didn't need the ambulance. She's all right. She didn't hold. one up. But yeah, look, it was, I mean, that was as traumatic as it gets.
Bloody hell, you went through it.
To talk about it in a light where I'm able to slow a little bit. I remember I followed the ambulance down. It's so fucked up that I'm laughing, but you'll understand. Anyway, like it became quite serious, to be fair, and the paramedic waited outside. As I turned up, she rushed me in A&E, and I saw my partner there, and my partner had lost a lot of blood. It wasn't a very good sight. I thought, as a calming man that I am, I'm going to stay calm. As panicked as I was, I thought, no, it's fine. So I'm holding her hand, like, be fine. Everything's going to be fine. I was as calm as a cucumber, right? Anyway, she has her operation. She comes around, and later on, when she's feeling better, I was like, I came up and I was like, how are you feeling? She's like, you're all right. Oh, you know, yeah, not the best. And she went, you were a lot of you, so weren't you?
I love it.
I was like, what? I was like, what are you talking about? I was so calm. Like, she went, yeah, you might have been saying the right things, but you didn't blink.
Hey, when you're going to be in trouble, it doesn't matter. It. You're going to be in trouble.
I love
Trust me.
Got in trouble for not blinking.
Is that you breathing?
Yeah. Wow. How dare you breathe?
Fear was eyes and I had no idea.
Should have probably blamed you for Deirdre down the road. As
no,
well,
I need to, James, I need to know what your response was.
I've got nothing to say.
He proposed and now he's... you've nailed it, because it is important to, and we discussed this a lot, it is important to recall some parts of the story with a smile on your face. It's also important to still enjoy your life and your relationship and everything that comes with it. And at some point, you know, you have to start coming out of your shell again and maybe being, you know, well, we always ask this. Can you remember the first time that you really sort of belly laughed and for a moment the light came back in the room a little bit? I always refer to Matt because he went on holiday with Crystal, wasn't it? And a pigeon nicked his chips.
Seagull.
And that was the first. Sorry. Does it matter what bird it is?
Yeah.
So,
of course,
a winged animal.
Pigeons don't nick chips, do they? Seagulls like.
Seagulls are bastards.
They are. Right. Yeah. Oh. Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, you were there to get, you know, to have some time away together. And that was it. You rolled about on the floor laughing, and the albatross nicked the rest of the chips. Albatross. Whatever it was.
It's the one out never.
You have to. You have to laugh. And you have to find those moments, right? And we do. We like, whether it's me doing a silly dance or she starts dancing, whatever it is, we just find these moments between ourselves during the hardest 3.5 years of our lives laugh. And you have to. If you don't have that, what are you doing it for? But look, we're still going. We're still plugging away. We've had, we've had lots of tests, scans. Different specialists we're speaking to. We tried IVF because we thought that might be an issue with the embryo. So we had 5 tested, 2 had Down syndrome. So that was a bit of a, maybe that was the reason why something happened. Anyway, we tried an implantation and sadly that didn't work in October. So we're just trying to discover different options at the moment. It's probably the best way of putting it. We met a new specialist a week ago that found something that might be causing it all,
right,
which was something that was flagged about 2 years ago. We were due to have an operation on the NHS, but the NHS, little I say about them, the better at the moment, were very good. So, but then we had other specialists who also didn't see this issue. So it's a tough process. It's a long process.
Yeah.
We feel like we're in a better state, maybe a better place now than we were a month ago.
Okay.
So a month ago we had an appointment and our specialists have basically told us to start thinking about surrogacy.
Right.
And adoption. And we didn't want to go, didn't want to think about that point.
Yeah.
And this other specialist has given us new, you know, hope that actually, no, hold on a minute, we might have missed it before. We're going to find out what the issue is. We're going to try and fix it. And then we're going to go again. So, long road, but we may be a little bit more hopeful than we have been.
James, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. Before we go, there's just a couple more things I'd like to ask you, because you mentioned a couple of times, and it's completely normal, I think, with almost every guest, especially the guys that we've had on most of the time, is the, I think you mentioned it, you get back in the car and you're just angry, or there's where did that go? How did you do you? deal with it? Is there a particular, for some people, you know, it's gym, going to the football, hitting a wall. Was it the guy from EastEnders? He punched the fridge and William broke his Ellis. Hand. He got addicted to, it was William Ellis who played Theo Hawthorne.
Played that game, didn't he?
In EastEnders. He was playing Clash of Clans, app. Yeah. And he was using it. That was his distraction. And he lost, I'm using his words, not mine. He lost to a 13-year-old specky twat. And he punched the fridge and broke his wrist.
Yeah.
I'll leave that.
I would never play online video games for that purpose.
That's our ambassador there, William Ellis.
Yeah,
he's ambassador.
Oh yeah, I've got. Yeah, he's also
ambassador
our new
podcast.
He's our new ambassador for the podcast. So thank you, William.
But he opened up about that. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's. It was about a month ago he joined us actually, William. That was it. So yeah, but yeah. Have you broken anything?
No, I haven't actually. No, I've always been a little bit smarter than that. I also can't punch to save my life. That's probably it. The anger's interesting because it's such a male thing, isn't it? And I remember going through the first time. I remember my sister sent me a message, and she put, it's like the next day or something, and she put like, "How are you? Are you okay?" I remember my rage at the time, like literally screaming in a house. She wasn't there. She just messaged. What do you think? Of course I'm not okay. What the fuck? My head.
Yeah.
Couldn't reply back. And I think I went out for a run. And exercise for me works.
It
does. It works. It clears my head. I actually can punch, by the way, so don't. Don't try.
We're setting up a charity boxing match with you and William Ellis.
Well, I've got a punch bag in my guard. I don't fancy getting hit myself, though. That's the only thing. It can affect my career. So
It's called the Clash of Clans.
I actually used a punch bag a lot.
Good.
I used a punch bag, went running, and it helps clear my head and calm me down. And then I ultimately replied to my sister because I realised after having that time to go, she's not asking, she's just checking in on you.
Yeah.
Like, that's all it is.
Imagine when she got that reply. She's like,
God. I told her that as well. And I said, oh my God, I could have sent you the worst message ever. You had never spoken to me again.
Do you know what? Something I find when you get angry and you want to send an angry message to someone, the best thing to do is to write the message, don't hit send, and then wait an hour or so. And then look at the message decide if you still want to send it or not. Don't do what I do, which is sit, send anyway by accident.
So that's not great advice then, is it?
up to the last bit. Yeah.
That's what
Ryan, how many times have you angrily tweeted about Aston Villa?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't actually tweet that often.
Yeah.
In fact, no, I can't think of when I've tweeted. When have I last tweeted? Do you know what? I can't even remember when. Tell a lie.
You do know.
I tweeted last night.
Last night.
I don't remember. I never do it.
Last night. Yeah. Oh, I was just fucking angry after that.
I love football fans. I love
them. Not
best,
fickle or anything, are we? No.
Final question. Try and answer this if you can, because it's on the back of what Matt asked you. It was earlier on in the podcast when he said, and it was due to back to work. I thought it was a great question because sort of in a way, you're present, but you're not present. So there was an element of the acting, you know, as Matt said, you're in that mode. If anyone could play your role at any actor.
Sean Dyche.
So glad you said that. Thank you for coming on, because I know you got a cold tonight, haven't you? You've been struggling. He hasn't mentioned. Yes, this is the difference. We moaned about it all bloody week last week when we're all three of us. He hasn't mentioned it once. So fair play.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Done well there.
He did before we came on air.
I know, but that's different. You're allowed.
Yeah.
But this is his professionalism, isn't it? That he hasn't then mentioned it whilst he's been talking.
He's been on the night nurse before we started, hasn't he?
Night nurse.
Dosed up.
Do you know that's banned now?
Is it?
Is it? Yeah.
Banned.
Serious?
In the UK, night nurse is banned.
What about day nurse? Story.
I think that's banned as well, but I think night nurse went first. You might still be able to get day nurse.
Why is it banned?
Genuinely didn't know that.
My mum overdosed my sister on night nurse when she was younger, and she missed the first morning of school. She missed the morning at school.
I shouldn't say it, but my friend of mine, you know what it's like when you're idiots at school, he's like 16, the guy went, oh, I've got some night nurse and day nurse, I'm going to mix them. What's it going to do? He's like, so it's like midday nerds. What difference is it going to be? I don't get it.
No. So, you know, that stuff is so powerful, strong. I remember having the flu, walking around London, going into Boots, getting a pack of the Jewel pack, right? The day and night. Opening the pack, taking the wrong ones, and then about 10 minutes later, literally, like, walking.
Someone selling that on the proper, got this stuff, mate. I've got some got a bit of ganja. What else you got? A bit of night nurse.
I bet there's a market now for it. Now it's banned.
Someone will have it, won't they?
I didn't realise it's banned.
That's why Deirdre wanted the ambulance. She was off her face on it.
I'd have loved to have seen you walking around London looking like you'd been on Spice or something like that.
Honestly, like, just picture it. I was like, I could barely open my eyes. I'm like a zombie. It was awful.
Get a video of him. I saw him on TV earlier. Yeah, let's get him cancelled. They're just like that, aren't they?
Cheers, Dan. Trying to ruin my career. I see what you're doing. All right.
I'm not the one selling your night nurse at corners.
Well, someone could do. I'll tell you what, I could have some tonight. That'd be lovely.
James, we could talk to you for hours. If you ever want to join us on the show again, feel free. Absolutely. Even if you just want to jump on with us for 5-10 minutes one night, if you ever want to do another episode again and give us an update, or if you just want to ever talk to us or join us with another guest, you're always
absolute
welcome.
Absolute pleasure. I'm sorry I missed you a couple of weeks ago while I was in the depths of Poland and Warsaw.
Was it cold?
What were you doing in Poland? Was it Polish transfer deadline?
It was cold. No, it was nothing to do with sport, actually. I was shooting a SodaStream commercial.
Brilliant. I would never have guessed that.
He was shooting a night nurse one, that's why.
Wow, we've got...
If I had been shooting a night nurse one, I'd have stacks of it at home and I'd be messaging that is all the three most... of you going, do you want some of the good stuff?
SodaStream, get busy with a fizzy.
Yeah, I used to have one of them when I was young. I had no idea that was still going.
It's come back. The machines are cooler, but they're still water.
I could never understand it. Like, why? I just buy one. I can have one with bubbles already in. It's like when I was at school as well. It's when you used to get the packet of fish and chips? You used to have to rip the salt and put it in yourself. I'm like, how lazy are the people making them? Yeah. Just put it in for me. I'm already paying for it. Put the fucking salt in.
You're absolutely right. There used to be crisps like that as well.
Salt and shake.
That's part of your job. I'm the consumer. You're the manufacturer.
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah, wow. Salt and shake.
Brought back memories, that did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Night nurse and salt and shake on the Still Parents podcast.
Still Parents podcast talking about SodaStream.
But
let me finish on SodaStream. Brilliant product. Brilliant advertised. Going to be beautiful.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Royalties.
Good man. Listen, we'll let you go there, James. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the Still Parents podcast, supported by Globals. Make some noise. We would love it if you could give us a follow, or even if you have time. I know you got better things to do, but it's just maybe a sentence. Give us a review, because it really helps us to be discovered, help new listeners come on and discover the podcast as well. Our Instagram, Still Parents Podcast. Our website, stillparentspodcast.co.uk. Thank you very, very much for listening. If you've got any questions, you can reach out to us through there. And that is your lot. James, take care. Hope the cold clears up. Enjoy your SodaStream. Watch out for a deer dream. Don't get caught by a night nurse. That wasn't a sentence I thought I'd say today.
That's a good finish, that is. I like that.
It's a great finish. Yeah, I'm very impressed.
James, take care, buddy. All the best.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.